Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
So he's got to go here and just get a good, good look.
Booker. Got it! At the buzzer! Devin Booker has done it again!
The Solar Panel, a weekly Suns podcast, part of the almighty Baller Podcast Network. We are PHX.
So my sister has a child, and for Christmas, it's always really tough. What do I get the kid for Christmas? And so what I went with this year, specifically to make my sister really happy, was I went with a toy drum set that made a lot of noise. Have you guys ever had that where you've gone and you've purchased somebody a drum set for their kid just to be a really nice person?
Look, my aunt, when I was a kid, purchased me a drum set, and it was the bane of my parents' existence for a while. I think it was 5 when she bought it for me. And, you know, I didn't really fully appreciate why it was so annoying until I became a parent myself. And now every toy that my daughter has, if you bump into it or you half touch it, it makes some kind of noise. And every time I do that, it's when my daughter is trying to sleep. And she's 4 months old, so every little noise now totally wakes her up. And it's the most annoying thing in the world that every toy makes noise. Why? Why do they have to do that? I don't get it, and I don't want it. I just want something quiet. What happened to stuffed animals that make absolutely no noise and just help your kids sleep?
Well, to that point, I actually just did, because in my real job, I host a radio show every week.
Not unlike this, then.
And we just did this huge segment on safe sleeping for babies, actually. And apparently you are not supposed to have stuffed animals anywhere near the crib while the baby's sleeping. So maybe that's part of it.
Well, I sometimes wonder how children have survived at all. I mean, how are we even still alive? All the things we've discovered that are necessary for safe sleeping for babies, not on their back, not on their stomach, not with too much around their face, not with any noise, not with any sounds, but with sounds, but they got to be soothing sounds. Mm-hmm. And then they, you know, not much light, but then with a little bit of light, as long as it's soothing light. And all these things, how are we even around?
Well, we're messed up. I mean, let's be honest about it. we're not perfect, so that's a part of it for sure.
Well, so I found out on the show, and I don't know if you guys know this or if you've ever met anybody that has a flat head at the very back of their head. It's yep. A bit flat. I found out that is because people kept their babies on their back for too long, and so it flattens the skull, and that's where that comes from.
Oh, well, I've got a pointy head, so I guess they didn't lay me on my back then.
No, not too much.
You got a big head. What happened there? Is that just ego got larger over the years, or was that parent-related?
That's brains, man.
Good. Nice save, Dave. Impressive.
We are PHX.
You are listening to the Solar Panel, a Phoenix Suns podcast, part of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. Greg Esposito, Dave King. My name is Tim Tompkins. You can follow the show on Twitter at Suns Solar Panel. You can follow Greg individually at Espo, Dave King at Dave King NBA, and myself, Tim Tompkins at Radio Tim NBA. Each and every week, we want to give you guys a shout out for giving us a shout out by leaving us a review on iTunes. We will read them. Good or bad. And this week, I thought we actually got a very nice one. All right. Mr. Ed Hindell left us a 5-star review on iTunes and says, "At last, the long search for a good Phoenix Suns podcast is over. Unlike other Suns podcasts, this one offers in-depth analysis from professional plugged-in reporters and writers. It's a great way to catch up if you don't have the time to watch all the Suns games. This podcast will be a perfect companion for the Suns' new era as they collect excellent young talent and build around budding superstars like Devin Booker in order to take over the league in 7-ish years after the Warriors' reign of terror ends."
Two things. We got to do this for at least 7 years to be around when this team's good. That seems a bit daunting to me. And then I think we inadvertently just started a rivalry with every other Suns podcast by this guy claiming it's not good, none of them are good, and we're the only good ones. So,
I've been on some other podcasts, and we all have been on some other Suns-related podcasts. That's kind of an insult at the same time it's a compliment.
Hey, I haven't been on another Phoenix Suns-related podcast. This is
you're the difference maker, Tim.
To that point, well, we can do a shameless plug. Mr. Dave, you were on a different Suns podcast earlier in the week. People can take a listen to that if they want, right?
Yeah, we are part of Bright Side of the Suns. We help promote the Locked On Suns podcast, which is part of the Locked On Network that is managed nationwide. And that's every day, Monday through Friday. Kellen Olson is the primary host, and Eddie House is his sidekick. Who really gives some great insights as a former NBA player. That's there's a post about 20 minutes long every day, Monday through Friday. And then this solar panel is great because we cover the weekends. Bright Side of the Sun also has By the Fans, For the Fans podcast by a couple of guys who just love to watch the games and talk about the Suns. So there's a lot of podcasts out there. They're all being shared on Bright Side of the Sun. That's brightsideofthesun.com. Feel free to stop by anytime.
Dave just got us kicked off the Almighty Baller Network by mentioning the other competing network.
So. Hey, Tim, you started it.
We are PHX.
And you are listening to the Sun Solar Panel, a Phoenix Suns podcast. Dave King, Greg Esposito, Tim Tompkins. You can follow us on Twitter at Suns Solar Panel. So the big question is something that happens every year. And Robert Sarver, he made a speech to Suns season ticket holders.
I thought you're passing it to me here. Is this the pass now? All right. He did talk to Suns season ticket holders, from what I'm aware of. I believe it was the State of the Suns event, and so he apparently, now I can't confirm nor deny, I was not at this event, but our friends at Reddit provided us with a rundown of what supposedly was said by the owner and managing partner of the Phoenix Suns, Robert Sarver. And apparently the highlights of it were, he said, you need 3 all-stars to win in this league. I don't think any of us would argue with that, and that he feels Devin Booker's well on his way. Same with Eric Bledsoe, and that they have potential for a third, but they probably need to add one. He also said they're not going to go after any major free agents this summer, and that 2020, not the show, the year 2020 is actually when they are trying to aim to be true contenders in this league. Interesting thought, because it's a different tone and a different direction that this Suns team seems to be taking. And it's interesting to hear that Robert Sarver, a guy who has been in the past known to be impatient, is truly buying into this.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting take as well. Now, whenever Robert Sarver has talked about it, he has said that he is patient. He has told people that he is patient, that the team needs to rebuild. We just keep hearing through second and third hand sources. Greg, you may have had some first hand sources when you worked for the Suns, but mine was always second and third hand. I was always under the impression that Robert Sarver was really great like during the game, but when it came to crunch time in terms of life, you know, when it's trade deadline or draft or free agency, he would totally flip the switch and suddenly decide he wanted to win now. So I hope he has now settled in and he's not going to push the Suns during either the draft or free agency or during trade period this summer and try to suddenly make a winning team. I hope he's really committed to this. I've heard this kind of thing before, although he hasn't been this strong and this definitive with it, apparently. To the fan base, because he's never wanted to admit to the fans that they weren't trying to win games if he was talking face to face with them. So this is a little bit of a departure, but he's always sounded more patient than he really was. Greg, had you heard anything different?
No, I think he gets a bad reputation on certain things unfairly. I have never met a man who genuinely wants this team to win a title. I won't say more than him, but he is very passionate about getting this team a title. He learned his lesson from some of those 7 seconds or less years where it was always didn't quite make that next move. There were some different things that happened. He genuinely wants to win, and I think he wants to do it right now. And that is a big credit to Ryan McDonough. I think he sold this vision on how to build this team through draft. And if you notice, he didn't say there wouldn't be any big trades. He just said they wouldn't try to sign a guy through the free agent market. So there, I think a trade is very much still a possibility. I think has always been part of Ryan McDonough's larger, grander scheme for all of this. But I give major credit to Ryan McDonough for selling a vision of what and how to get this future that Robert Sarver so dearly has wanted by building it and building it slowly. And if 2020 is when this plan comes to fruition, more power to him. I'm all right waiting another 2.5-3 years to actually build this right and be a true title contender, because that timeline works around the same time that Golden State and Cleveland probably aren't the dominant forces that they are right now.
Yeah, so let's talk about the players on the roster to see if the Suns are actually building a roster that can grow into being competitive. I'm sure fans have noticed that the Suns have won
five and five in the last 10 as well.
Yeah. They had the 3-game winning streak and then the 2 losses and now the 2 wins. I think they've done very well lately with their youngest team. We have like the makings of potential all-stars on the team with Eric Bledsoe. I think the only reason he's not an all-star this year is A, because he doesn't have that effusive personality that fans love to vote for, and B, because he's not playing on a winning team. So someone like a Kemba Walker and guys like that can make the all-star game in their conference if their team is winning, even though they don't have a huge personality. But it really helps to have that big personality. So speaking of that, I think Devin Booker actually is the most likely to be named to an all-star game in the next 2 to 3 years. But that's, you know, that's really about it as far as guys that we think that are showing all-star skills. That could develop into skills. You've got two guys who play almost the same position in Dragan Bender and Marquise Chris. You've got a Derrick Jones Jr. who could be a nice rotational player as a surprise. You've got Tyler Ulis who could be a nice rotational player as a surprise. But the Suns are going to need one or two more big-time all-stars on their roster if they're going to even make that leap by 2020. And so that's why this year's draft makes so much is so important. Now, it's not necessarily important exactly where they are before the lottery or even where they are after the lottery. It's picking the right guy when they're actually in the draft. There's going to be a multi-time All-Star available no matter where the Suns are picking. The question is whether the Suns can pick that player.
Let's be honest, Ryan McDonough has proven he can find that guy anywhere in the draft.
He's gotten better. Yeah, he's better at finding gems later in the draft, like with Devin Booker and TJ Warren are better than their draft slot. And I think we're going to see that Marquise Chris was better than his slot in the year he was drafted. We're still not sure on Dragan Bender. We've hardly seen him. And Alex Len, though, has shown that Ryan McDonough's first shot at a top five pick, although that was a terrible draft, he might have been able to do better if he'd have been more outside the box thinking on that year.
Just a reminder, the number one pick that year isn't even in the league anymore.
It was a tough draft.
While that's true, there was also a Rudy Gobert who was available.
But if you look, if you look how far, it wasn't like he was a top five pick that the Suns whiffed on. I mean, a lot of teams didn't hit on that. And Alex Len was actually rumored to go number one to Cleveland, and they backed off on that at the last second. So, and that was the draft that Ryan McDonough.
Anthony Bennett.
Well, that was the draft Ryan McDonough came in and had, what was it, 6 weeks to prepare? Wasn't it?
Yeah.
He got hired like right before the draft. So.
Yeah, he was scouting for the Celtics before that, though. So it's not like he was unprepared. But I hear what you're saying, Greg. I think that was a tough draft to scout.
There was also Steven Adams was that year too, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. He went 10th. Mm-hmm. I think if the Suns had been picking in the 10 to 13 range like they were every year before and after that, we probably would have ended up with a better player than Alex Len, because that's where the better players went, was in the 10 to 27 range of that draft.
Yeah.
So, you know, looking at the Sarberg's comments, I don't think the Sarberg explicitly said we aren't going to go out and get a free agent. His wording was no veteran free agents this summer.
Well, so you assume that's more of a big name guy if you're looking at free agency that way. You'll add some nice young pieces that fit it, but you're not going to go out and try to land that big name guy. You're not going to go get a Tyson Chandler to try to get a LaMarcus Aldridge kind of move again, I think is what he was trying to say.
So taking a look at the cap situation and the roster situation going into the summer is that the Phoenix Suns, let me pull this up right here. So they are going to have essentially, depending on what they do with Barbosa, they're going to have three open roster spots. We can talk about cap holds a little bit too, the Phoenix Suns cap holds. So they got a $12 million cap hold on Alex Len, $1.5 million on Alan Williams going into this offseason or going into the summer, though. It looks like they aren't really going to have a lot of room to sign any major players, you know, whether or not they can deal with Brandon Knight. Obviously, that'll impact it a bit. I'm talking about around $15 million right there, but it's looking like right now that the Suns are going to be they're going to hit the salary floor for sure, so it doesn't look like they have a lot of cap room anyway. That $12 million cap hold on Alex Len is quite a doozy and a big decision that the Suns have to make.
Yeah, that is a big one. Greg, you put out a question on the Solar Panel Twitter handle, didn't you?
I think that was Tim.
Credit where credit is due.
Or is that coming later?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Sorry about that.
Tim, you asked the good questions. I just retweet myself and BS on there. So Tim does the good stuff.
All right. So we asked the question, something we actually brought up last week as well, which is the Suns going into this offseason is that they have two players, which both, in my opinion, project to be backup bigs that they're going to have to make a decision on. So if you had to give either Alex Len or Alan Williams 4 years, $10 million, who would you pick? Taking a look at their per 100 possession numbers, offensive rating for Alex Len is 101. Defensive rating for Alex Len per 100 possessions is 106. You look at Alan Williams, offensive rating of 114 and a defensive rating of 104. You compare the numbers, and I know, Dave, that you're a big fan of rebound percentage. Total rebound percentage, Alex Len 17% compared to Alan Williams at 24%. Alan Williams also has a better steal percentage at 2%, a better block percentage at 5%, a lower turnover percentage at 12% compared to Alex Len's 16%.
Yeah, I thought that those are very interesting numbers. One thing, the only thing I would say is that Alex Len has been playing against tougher competition all year, which can affect his total numbers compared to Alan Williams, who only recently has been playing against equal level competition as Alex Len. So I would just use that as a little bit of a caveat, but overall, it's clear that Alan Williams is a producer, definitely a producer, and Alex Len has been a bit of a disappointment. So definitely, if you had to compare guys with, a like role next year, I'd actually advocate for the Suns to have fewer centers next year and go with a small ball lineup, kind of like they did against Dallas last night. And they played Marquese Chris most of the game at center against Dirk because Dallas was without Nerlens Noel. And so they played Dirk at center most of the time. So
was
the
Alex
Suns
Len
countered. He had a hip pointer or something like that. So he sat out the game. So Alan Williams, though, only played a few minutes, actually less than I would have expected, because they went with Marquese Chris most of the time at center last night. So I would actually advocate for that kind of lineup in coming years, where Bender and Chris kind of rotate into the center position with one traditional center on the team, maybe another as a complete backup, like an Earl Barron type, just in break in case of emergency type. And who that center should be is really a toss-up between Alex Len and Alan Williams.
Look, I'm going to go full Charles Barkley on you guys. I don't care about this analytics crap when we're talking about this battle here who the center that you're going to keep out of these two are, because the eye test tells you everything you need. Alex Len isn't getting it done, hasn't gotten it done, and Alan Williams, every chance he gets, goes out there, scores and rebounds. And that's what you're going to want from your backup center, is a guy you can trust that's going to go in there and he's not going to screw things up for you. Because right now, it sounds like Tyson Chandler is a part of this team and is going to be around. I think it actually came from those same Robert Sarver comments where he admitted they went to Tyson Chandler and point blank said, we will deal you if you want. And Tyson Chandler admitted that he'd rather play the mentor role like he had centers in Chicago play for him when he was a young rookie. I think he's going to be around. So I'd much rather have Alan Williams as that center out of Alex Len and Alan Williams. I like Alex Len, nice guy. He's just not getting it done, and I don't care if the numbers even said anything different. Visually, you can just tell Alan Williams better fits the future and the youth movement of this Phoenix Suns, both attitude-wise and play-wise on the court.
You know, I will go in that direction a little bit, Greg, and totally agree with you in terms of attitude-wise. Alex Len is great, and he's a very nice guy, but Alan Williams is a dude who raises everybody's intensity around him. He dives all over the court. He's basically just as much a cheerleader on the court as he is off the court, which is the biggest cheerleader in the game. Certainly biggest, because the Suns dancers are not that big, but certainly he's also the loudest and the most inspirational amongst his team too. And the other thing, I'm gonna channel a coach for a little bit. I've never been a coach, but I do manage people on a regular basis, and I'd much rather have somebody who I can trust and will deliver every night the same thing, every day the same thing, over somebody who occasionally flashes and occasionally doesn't even show up. And so the consistency of Alan Williams, you always know what you're going to get out of him. He's got a lower ceiling than Alex Len, but his ceiling is much more consistently reached, even as a first year getting a regular rotation spot. Even though he's not officially a rookie, he's basically a rookie this year.
So what do the Suns do then? Do they just let Alex Len walk? Did they do a sign and trade and try and deal him so they don't let him leave for nothing? I mean, it's a tough spot. They're either going to have to sign both of them or let one of them walk.
I think they have to let Alex Len walk, and they have to hope and cross their fingers that it doesn't become a Brandon Knight type situation where nobody else wants him, and so they're stuck. I think somebody will sign Alex Len. I thought earlier in the season it'd be somewhere he'd be one of the first guys off the board, like a Timofey Mozgov this summer. But the way he's played the last couple of months has not helped him at all. So I hope he finishes the year with a little bit more consistency and gets a huge contract, and he gets a chance to start for some other team that might be able to create consistency out of him that he's not otherwise getting. And I hope the Suns keep Alan Williams and they give a nice salary to keep him totally off the market even in the first place.
Yeah, I think we've learned that big men are going to get overpaid in the NBA, and I think Alex Len's going to be one of those guys, because potential is the largest four-letter word in sports. It's a dangerous word to deal with, and people see massive potential still in Alex Len, and somebody's going to think, oh, I can tap into this and pay him big money. I don't think it's any coincidence that since Alan Williams has played more minutes, we've seen the Suns win, and we've seen them seemingly have more fun playing out there together too. I think that's a big key. So I hope, like Dave said, they give him a sizable enough contract where he doesn't even consider going elsewhere.
We are PHX.
So we interrupt this great podcast that you're listening to. My name is Kevin Rafuse.
I'm Tim Tompkins.
And I'm Justin Cousart.
And we host the Drive and Dish NBA podcast.
We cover every team in the league and a bunch of really fun segments like Random NBA Player, Drive and Dougal, and Hot Takes from Reddit.
So when you're done listening to this podcast, give us a search on iTunes or whatever podcast streaming app you're listening on.
We're also at driveanddishpodcast.com. We are the Drive and Dish NBA podcast.
So one of the things we wanted to look at was the free agents that are available this summer, because one thing that Sarver said is, look, there's not really a lot of free agents that are going to be available. So I want to toss this to you guys first, and then I'll kind of read who's going to be the top free agents that are going to be available at that position this year, and we can kind of analyze whether or not you guys think the Suns will take any of them. What position of need, if the Suns were going to sign somebody, would they be looking at?
I don't feel like they're at a point where it's position of need necessarily. I think it's, is there a quality young player that fits the timeline of the rest of these guys that you can add to the mix that you either is a great asset or a guy that'll help you down the line? I don't think in this rebuild it's a point where you're looking, what position is it? Just take last year's draft. They draft two guys that project to be power forwards because they were, in their mind, the two most talented guys that they could get in that draft, and they made the move for it. I think that's what you're looking at is, does Ryan McDonough and his staff see a guy out there that's young that they feel can actually add to this mix, that's an intriguing young talent that they can get at the right price?
Yeah, I think that's about the only way to go. But then again, you have to overpay for that intriguing young talent unless you're going to find, you know, have a find like a Derrick Jones Jr. I'd rather they focus on guys like that this summer than try to spend money on. I mean, if you look back on it, Harrison Barnes, we just watched that Dallas game last night. Harrison Barnes turned out to be a really good signing by the Mavericks, and he's actually playing like a guy who was worth $25 million a year that the Mavericks gave him in the offseason. A lot of us were skeptical. I've always personally been a big fan of Barnes because he's a really good defender. He can slide over to the four. All the things we thought about the potential with the Harrison Barnes have been realized with Dallas this year, and that's just a huge kudos to Rick Carlisle with Dallas. But, you know, that kind of guy, even him, I wouldn't sign this summer. He was only 23. He would fit the timeline age-wise of the Suns. But if he were available again this year or someone like him, I don't know that I would spend all that money on him because you really don't need that yet. The Suns need to be developing their players first. And then in the summer of 18, maybe, signing the guy who's gonna make him an annual contender to try to reach the second round of the playoffs. But really, the Suns need to develop with this core right now in this summer's draft. Going into next year and see where that takes them.
Taking a look at some of the available free agents coming up. A few of these guys are restricted. You have a Bogdanovich. He's a restricted free agent. You're going to have a Tim Hardaway Jr. shooting guard over at Atlanta. He is a restricted free agent as well. You're also going to have some other names of note, though. You have Gordon Hayward, restricted. You have Otto Porter, restricted. You have Derek Williams, a U of A standout. I think that the Suns have always, or at least Suns fans, have always really wanted the Suns to sign a Derek Williams. What's the likelihood of something like that happening?
Well, if they were going to sign a Derek Williams, they would have done it in one of the last 2 years when he was continually available to sign a 10-day contract. So I don't think you're going to see a guy like that.
Okay. I was trying.
That's a U of A fan talking right there. Derek Williams is not an NBA player.
No.
I mean, even his good stretch in Cleveland right now, who was having the great stretch in Cleveland a year ago? Jordan McRae. Who is now
out of the
rotation.
Don't besmirch former Suns great Jordan McRae. All right?
No, I'm saying Jordan McRae has some skills, has some talent, but Cleveland made him look better than he was for a small stretch because, hey, it's a young guy, you know. So I think we should not read into this Derek Williams stretch and suddenly be offering him $5-10 million a year.
Yeah, look, I love a name like a Gordon Hayward, but it's unrealistic because Utah's going to match. And, if they were going to get him, they would have gotten him a few years ago when he was a free agent, too. Right now,
Gordon Hayward's unrestricted. Utah can't add the fifth year to that deal, though. But
yeah, I think in all likelihood he winds up back in Utah. And if the Suns were going to get him, they would have gotten him when Jeff Hornacek, who helped Gordon Hayward back in the day as a Utah coach, was head coach here. So great name, would love to have him. Don't see it happening. And if it's not a top tier young guy like that, I don't get in the fray. I agree with, and I hate continually agreeing with you, Dave, but I agree, unless it's a guy like a Derek Jones Jr., a young, high ceiling guy that you can bring in on the cheap, I don't go chasing guys right now. I focus on trades. If some great young talent, a la a Jimmy Butler becomes available and you feel like The asking price isn't too high. Maybe you look at that kind of a move. And then you focus on the draft, because this draft is going to play a large role in what the future looks like and defining the future for this Phoenix Suns team.
Yeah, let's go back to just this past week or so. And let me just tell you, I'm posting an article later on this morning on brightsideofthesun.com. Go there and read all of your Suns stuff. And it'll already be up by the time this pod is posted. But the Suns fielded their youngest starting lineup in 49-year franchise history last night when they slid Derek Jones Jr. into the starting lineup as Alex Len had a hip pointer issue. And that just barely topped their earlier youngest starting lineup in franchise history with Alex Len in the starting lineup in place of Derek Jones. So I think and they won, and they've won 4 out of 6 games. They're hitting buzzer beaters. They're playing well. They're not making really dumb mistakes in the fourth quarter like the youngest team. They're barely older than the Villanova team that just won their league championship yesterday. They're barely older by half a year than a college team. So I really think the Suns have something to go with here. And when they add their young draft pick this summer, you don't want to muck it up with yet another mid-career guy who's going to want his minutes and his points and his stats. I'm not saying selfish, but I'm saying Eric Bledsoe. Eric Bledsoe is far from selfish. For people that call Eric Bledsoe selfish, they don't know Eric Bledsoe. That guy just wants to play basketball. He's a really, really good player, and he's so good that he deserves to get all the minutes he gets and to score the points he's scoring and to dish the assists he's dishing. And if you bring in a Gordon Hayward or you somehow trade for a Jimmy Butler, those guys are going to deserve every minute they play. And yet that just means that you're mucking up between, are you going to contend now or contend later?
I don't know. You think a lineup that includes an Eric Bledsoe, a Devin Booker, and a Jimmy Butler isn't, plus with a handful of these other young guys, isn't something that's a little bit more intriguing than where this team is right now? Because if you're going to keep Eric Bledsoe, I wouldn't mind adding that second or the first All-Star and yeah, up Eric Bledsoe's All-Star potential there. I think that's the big question. Is Eric Bledsoe a long-term part of the future? And we've both said we want him to be here. So if that's the case, I think pursuing a guy a la Jimmy Butler is what you got to consider doing. I think you have to look at it, because that doesn't expedite your timeline too much. It still plays into a play for being a championship contender in 2020, but it aligns things a little bit more with Eric Bledsoe's timeline. It takes a little bit of the pressure off Devin Booker, where maybe he can get a little bit more efficient with his scoring. And all of a sudden, you still have a very good young bench, too. I think that kind of a mix makes sense. I'm not going after a guy in the 27, 28, 29 range that's an all-star. I think that pushes you too far. But if we're looking early, mid-20s, I think I seriously consider that kind of a move.
It very much depends on how the draft goes. If you look at right now's roster, you can definitely make the case you just made. But what if in 3 months here in June, the Suns draft either a Jason Tatum or a Josh Jackson or a Jonathan Isaac? If you do draft one of those guys with a top five pick, this really is a talented draft, and that kind of guy deserves to get some playing time and prove that they are worthy of that top five pick. This isn't like a draft where you're going to develop these guys slowly, like the 2016 or 2013 drafts. Even though these guys are young, they're going to be playable right away. If you go out there and you draft a Markelle Fultz, then yeah, you're going to be trading Eric Bledsoe, and you're going to stay young as long as you can stay young. So it really depends on how that draft goes in June. And no, I would not acquire an all-star caliber free agent to play the same position of the guy I just drafted. And so that totally will answer a lot of free agency questions for us.
You also bring up the fact how young this team is and winning. I am getting very frustrated. I think you all can tell this on Twitter, at the fact that there are still people out there that think the Suns should just be losing rather than winning a game the way they did in Dallas on Saturday night. If you don't see how important the way this team is winning and the experience that these guys are getting – And you don't understand why that's important now, even though it may cost you a few ping pong balls in the draft. I don't know how to explain that to you, because what Devin Booker did with that game winner, it's huge in terms of his development. What Alan Williams is doing out there on the court that's leading to wins is huge for his development. Same with Derrick Jones Jr. It's not like this team is winning with Tyson Chandler and Brandon Knight. They're winning with the youth, and this does nothing but help build a solid foundation moving forward. So it's really starting to piss me off that people still think they should just be losing these games on purpose. There is a benefit to the way that they're winning. This isn't a team like the 13-14 season team that won 48 games but was a more veteran team where winning didn't help push you into the future. Winning now is actually helping these guys develop. And if you don't see that, I struggle to understand how you look at the game.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. Now, if you're winning games with 35-year-olds having, 20-20 games, I totally understand a little bit of frustration with that. You know, some of the earlier wins this season, the ones that did come few and far between anyway, but when they did come, if they were backed on a 35-year-old or a 32-year-old or someone like that who isn't in the Suns' future, I can see the frustration with that. But, man, last night's game is the exact ideal situation for a young rebuilding team, finishing games in the clutch with a 20-year-old who's probably the youngest ever. I haven't looked up this stat yet, but he's probably the youngest ever to have two game winners in a single season as a 20-year-old. And you know he probably had some kind of running thing with Tyler Ulis after Tyler hit the game winner a week or two ago. And then Devin Booker didn't have anything he could stand on saying he was better than Ulis anymore, and so he had to hit yet another game winner. That's the perfect example of how to win games with the youngest team in the league. Hitting a game winner like that is beautiful to watch, and if you were against that kind of win, then you're really not using your logic.
Well, and you look at the way Devin Booker hit that shot, and people want to talk about this team needs a star. That was the kind of star shot that you saw a Kobe Bryant make back in the day. Just the move, and it pains me to say anybody on the Suns is Kobe Bryant-esque, but just that move that Devin Booker made, that was big time. That was adult basketball. That wasn't a 20-year-old. That was a guy that you want taking that final shot. It was impressive the way he hit that. If you aren't enjoying this and you don't see how this is helping the future, I don't get it, because it'd be one thing if there were only one player in this draft that were a difference maker and you needed the number one pick for this draft to be successful. But we're talking a draft that's probably 8 or 9 deep in terms of quality, top-tier impact players. So I don't care if you're a little further down in the draft lottery when you're getting the kind of wins like they are and the kind of experience they are for this young roster.
Well, the Suns are real close to falling to that sixth pick. Just taking a look at the tank rank right now, the Suns 22-44, 2.5 back of the Lakers, the Philadelphia 76ers 23-42, Orlando 24-43. You know, they're getting dangerously close to really falling in this draft. They're 5-5 in their last 10. And out of all the quote unquote tanking teams, you have the Nets who are 2-8 in their last 10, the Lakers 2-8, the 76ers 2-8, and then the Orlando Magic 3-7. So, you know, about 16 games left in the season, they're getting real close to seriously falling in this draft.
Yeah, but it's a lottery still. So you're not, if this were completely based on record and that's where you were slotted, I'd get the argument a little bit more. But we've seen how the draft lottery can totally change the complexion of things. And just because you've lost the most games or you've lost, the third most games in the league doesn't guarantee you anything. I'd rather take the wins and take my chance with the ping pong balls and the basketball gods, who I would hope smile a little bit more favorably on a team that isn't obviously tanking, a la the Lakers. So I would much rather win and take my chances with the sixth worst record or the fifth and see where the lottery balls fall.
Yeah, if you look at multi-time All-Stars from recent drafts, they're not all the number one pick. They really aren't, and they're not all even the top three. Kristaps Porzingis went fourth. Joel Embiid went third. Part of that was due to his injuries, and that's certainly still going on. I think he only got 31 games even this year, and that so he's in danger of doing the Sam Bowie kind of thing. Actually, worse. I mean, his name is drawing a blank. Who went ahead of Kevin Durant that year? Hello,
Greg Oden.
Help me out, guys. Greg Oden. That's right. You don't want him to become the Greg Oden of this generation. I really hope he doesn't. But really, there's guys that do get drafted later that do become multi-time All-Stars. And so I wouldn't worry about exactly draft position. I would worry about this team learning how to win so they can carry it into next year and feel good about themselves.
Well, that's going to happen a bit more, too. I mean, so we're looking at young players like Devin Booker, and everyone talks about how great Devin Booker is and all those guys. Is that there comes a certain point in their career when their talent starts to translate into wins, and that's kind of what we're seeing this season with Devin Booker is his talent is starting to translate into wins.
Younger guys don't all learn how to win. I mean, if you look at the Sixers, if you look at other teams, Orlando Magic, for example, younger guys don't always translate into wins the more experience they get. And so this has to be even more impressive that the Suns have lucked into a Devin Booker, the number 13 pick in the 2015 draft. And this guy looks like he's going to be a perennial All-Star coming up. That's really good, and you want to build around him as a 20-year-old. And you have likely 10 more years at least of him being in a Suns uniform the way the CBA is written these days, where the team is much more likely to be able to keep their guy for his entire career.
Well, and you look, too, Marquise Chris has started to show more as the season's gone on. A lot of these young guys are blossoming. And
Dragan Bender looked really good when he was playing.
So I watched Marquise Chris play and talking about this year's draft classes. It's been pretty underwhelming, but you look at Marquise Chris, he doesn't really average a whole lot of points, but whenever I watch him play, it looks like he scores so easily. I don't understand why he's not averaging at least double digit points, because scoring, just he has so many different weapons. He can hit the three ball, he can hit the mid range, he can go up for the alley-oop. I just don't understand why he's not averaging a bit more at this point of his rookie season.
I think it's foul trouble is one, and then the fact that he's a third or fourth option in this offense, too, is another reason why. So I don't think right now they're looking for him to be a huge scorer. They're going, okay, get your buckets when you get them, get your blocks, and get a feel for the game right now. And as you mature, then we'll make you a bigger focus of this offense.
I'm surprised he doesn't stumble into more points, I guess, just because of how easily he scores.
You know, he also is boxing himself in, and the coaching staff is boxing him in as far as his offensive versatility. They're not just giving him the ball on the wing and saying create points. They don't have to this year. If he had been on the Suns team last spring, he would have been in that position ahead of Alex Len as far as being the number two option to Devin Booker. But you've got Eric Bledsoe now, and you've got others. You have T.J. Warren. They don't need Marquise Chris to step outside his comfort zone and score. However, I will say that in March, he is averaging 12 points a game. He only got 5 last night, but he is averaging 12 points a game, and he is increasing every single month. Mostly, he's been held back by foul trouble, and the coach is kind of boxing him in offensively. I would not be surprised if he actually plays in Summer League this year just to get some exposure, expanding his offensive game and playing a little bit more creatively. We saw that last summer. The dude can drive and spin and score right at the rim. The guy has touch around the basket. So I agree with you, Tim, that he should be a double-figure scorer. It's just that this year he hasn't been even better than the fourth option on offense at any point.
Marquise Chris is such a talented player.
We are PHX.
You are listening to the Sun Solar Panel, a Phoenix Suns podcast, part of the Almighty Baller Network. Greg Esposito, Dave King. My name is Tim Tompkins. You can find us on Facebook at Suns Solar Panel. So I ask you, Greg, what's the most random thing that you would buy from a former Phoenix Sun?
All right. Well, I actually was giving Eddie Johnson crap yesterday, asking him if he had any of his short shorts available in this estate sale, and he said yes. But my wife's not going to let me go buy them. So I think if I could get anything random from any Phoenix Sun in the past, and this isn't going to be popular, there'd be one of two things. I'd either want to get the 1964 Kennedy silver half dollar that was used in the coin toss for Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in 1969, because I'm still convinced that is the origin of our curse. I'd love to melt it down and shoot it to the moon to end the Suns' curse. Or I'd want the towel that Robert Horry threw into Danny Ainge's face, because it's such an obscure part of Suns' history, and I'm pretty sure was the start of Robert Horry ripping our hearts out at every opportunity that he got as well. So I think it'd be one of those two things.
So this this question did remind me of remember when the Suns signed Michael Beasley, and none of us can forget that.
No, the Michael Beasley year, I will never forget. That was the low point of my Suns fandom, was the Michael Beasley year.
He was the number one target
of the front office.
Do you want Michael Beasley's personal stash, if you will? Is that what you're going with?
No,
Dave? For medicinal purposes only.
So he had unceremoniously left Minnesota that summer to sign with the Suns, and so he had to clear out his house, and he had the really interesting estate sale, and this local Minnesota reporter covered his estate sale in suburban Minneapolis that summer, and he had the weirdest collection of things in his house. I mean, if you guys thought Michael Beasley was weird, if you walked through his house apparently at that time, that showed just how weird he was. He had a house full of items ranging from high-end furniture to a book of Ingmar Bergman screenplays to a whole stash of women's handbags, 23-year-old Michael Beasley.
Gifts. I mean, you have to gift the ladies. Love doesn't come free.
Maybe they were like Derek Jeter's gift bags. After a night with Michael Beasley, your parting gift was a handbag.
Right.
Yeah, so that's exactly it. So if I'm going to take something really weird, I would go back in time. I would walk through his 5,000-square-foot, $1.4 million house in suburban Minneapolis in the summer of 2013, and I would find the most random thing and get Michael Beasley to sign it on media day in late September, and see if I can get him to laugh. The only thing I got him to say on media day in 2013 was that he much preferred being a guard rather than a forward, because there's way too much banging under the basket for him. He didn't like the physicality. That should have told us all we needed to know about Michael Beasley back then.
I mean, a lot of players feel that way, though. I mean, he's not the only one playing under the basket. Like, it hurts.
Yeah, but with all that banging under the basket, that's a lot of handbags you have to give out. So, you know. Anyway, bad joke. You can edit it out if you'd like. Can I do a sidebar and give you a Michael Beasley story from my time with the Phoenix Suns?
Sure.
I think you guys will appreciate this.
Yeah.
So Suns, I don't remember what city it was, but they were on a road trip, and all of a sudden they're getting on the team bus, and Michael Beasley goes, "We can't leave. We can't leave. I got to get off the bus. I got to go find my investments, man. I left my investments." All right.
What?
Nobody knows what the hell he's talking about. Everybody's really confused. So Beasley is going back through the arena looking for something. Now, you might assume it's something more nefarious than what it turns out. That was my initial thought when I heard the story originally back when it happened. Well, apparently his investment was this like leather travel bag full of just expensive watches. Lots of expensive watches. The dude apparently thought, you know, the best way to invest your money was these expensive Rolex and whatever kind of watches put in a bag that you carry around with you. Not stocks, not bonds, not gold, whatever you want to invest in. No, expensive men's watches that he inadvertently would leave in locker rooms that would hold up a team plane from time to time.
Derek Williams, I actually think he collects watches as well. So, you know, Michael Beasley is
all right,
the only.
We are definitely not signing Derek Williams then.
if there's any connection to Michael Beasley, yes. You know, if we're talking obscure items too that I wish I wish I could own. Well, I was with the Phoenix Suns the year that they went after Eric Gordon. I think it was the same summer as Michael Beasley. There were these shirts that they gave out to the entire staff. For when Eric Gordon came in, and we all had to stand in kind of a receiving line for him. And the shirts had Eric Gordon photoshopped into a number 10 Phoenix Suns jersey, and it said Cornerstone under it, right?
Yeah.
It was And basically implying he was the guy that was the future of the franchise. And to this day, I kick myself because I could have had one of those shirts, and it would be one of my favorite obscure Suns memorabilia things. That and the line that was in the press release when New Orleans matched, that Eric Gordon said, "My heart will always be in Phoenix." Those two things are my favorite Eric Gordon things. Sorry, a sidebar, but it's these things that for years I was sworn to secrecy on that now I can share with the world that I just enjoy.
I mean, Eric Gordon, he didn't want to play for the Pelicans. Look at how well he's playing for the Houston Rockets this year. I mean, there is an element of his game that I think would have translated if the Suns would have gotten him. And I just, but I've always wondered if they would have gotten Eric Gordon, where would we be now? You know, the entire franchise would just be so different.
They'd be where they were.
Yeah, it would be interesting if Michael Beasley and Eric Gordon were the cornerstones.
Hey, Luis Scola too. Don't forget about that. That was a thing for me. The one item, and Dave, you kind of stole my thunder with the Michael Beasley thing. But I was thinking if I could get anything from one player, it would be Michael Beasley's little black book, because I just have a feeling that thing is loaded.
I don't want to know what's in that book.
I don't know if it's loaded with the kind of people you want it to be loaded with, though. That's the problem, I think.
We are PHX.
So you are listening to the Solar Panel of Phoenix Suns podcast, part of the Almighty Baller Network. Dave King, Greg Esposito, my name is Tim Tompkins. Follow us on Twitter at Suns Solar Panel. Each and every week on the show, we want to give you guys a chance to submit a mailbag question. You can either do so by tweeting us on Twitter. That sounds repetitive, at Suns Solar Panel. Otherwise, we put it up on the Suns Reddit. This week, we have three that we're going to answer. So this one, the first one we're going to read is by Schoolfish, and I am not going to answer this one because I just find it offensive for a multitude of reasons. But Espo, since you picked these, I'm going to toss it to you first. Are the Suns a bunch of thugs?
Well, I agree with you. I picked it because I find the terminology interesting. I'm just going to leave it at that. You guys make your own implications with it. But it, just the thought that anybody ever in the world would ever say that the Phoenix Suns fit in that box is something I never thought I would hear in my life. And no, these guys aren't a bunch of thugs. They're playing tough. They're playing with an edge. And yes, they're getting in guys' faces. But no, they're not thugs. They're not the bad boy Pistons. They're just a team that's standing up for themselves and playing with an edge. And I'm glad to finally see a Phoenix Suns team play like this and play with not only the energy they're playing with, but standing up to guys when they feel like things may not be the kosher with what's going on. And yes, did Jared Dudley's half-hearted headbutt the other day this week, it really crossed the line. Maybe it put a toe over the line, but these guys aren't bad boys in any sense of the word. They're just playing with an edge.
If you guys, if fans think the any NBA players are thugs, let alone the Phoenix Suns, then you've got a really small frame of reference for your life. I mean, these guys do not know how to fight. Earl Watson earlier this year kind of made a joke in one of the pregame press conferences about some kind of NBA fight. He's like, look, man, NBA players don't even know how to fight. No one knows how to throw a punch. The first thing you do is you peacock around a little bit, and then you back off, and you wait for your teammates to back you off. I mean, that's the whole job of your teammates, is to push you away so you don't get into a fight. So, no, NBA players are not thugs. Phoenix Suns players are not thugs. If you don't know what a thug looks like, then you probably have a very narrow frame of reference, and that's okay, because none of us should know what thugs look like.
Joe Viters, B95, my apologies if I messed up your screen name there, on Reddit said, who is your favorite international Suns player? Dave, I'll kick this over to you first.
You know what? Jake Sokolidis. No one's going to believe me when I say that, but man, when I just loved the way his name rolled off the tongue. The Suns drafted how many different 7-foot international, big lumbering white guys from overseas to try to come in and fill the void as a franchise. The Colangelos were horribly, horribly inefficient in their signing of 7-footers of any nationality or race or creed or color in the history of the franchise. And they just kept repeating their mistakes in the first round of the drafts. And picking up Magic Lampe, also as an 18-year-old in that one trade back in the early 2000s. Georgi Gluskov way back in the 80s. That was just great. But Jake Sokolidis, I for some reason thought he was going to be a really good NBA player, and it just never panned out.
How about Nicholas Skidishvili, too?
There you go.
Another one. Georgi Gluskov would be on my list as one of my favorite because he ate his way out of the NBA, from what I understand. The lore of him back in the mid-'80s was he came over from the Eastern European bloc and wound up falling in love with McDonald's, and that's why he never amounted to much of anything as a member of the Phoenix Suns. And then Marko Milic is my answer. And I continually default to Marko Milic because anytime you can pick a guy who jumped over a Honda del Sol, and it was one of the first videos that made the rounds on the internet in the late 90s that you were so thoroughly impressed with. He was Blake Griffin before Blake Griffin in dunk contest. My answer will always be Marko Milic to this question.
Steve Nash. I can't believe I'm the first one to say this. This is Steve Nash.
Because Greg and I made a joke out of this question. Sorry about that.
Nash is by far Nash. PJ Tucker and Steve Nash are my two all-time favorite Suns players since I've been watching the Suns. Those are the two guys that I have by far the most respect for. But Steve Nash, man, gotta give a shout-out to Steve Nash.
I don't disagree. When you have a two-time MVP that's an international player,
right.
That probably should be your answer to this question.
The last one of the podcast is by Suns Fan 97. Is Dragan Bender expendable this offseason? And then piggybacking on that, is there any chance of the Suns drafting Malik Monk as a backup shooting guard for Book?
Everybody not named Devin Booker is in one way or another expendable on this roster. I fully believe that for the right price, any of these guys that aren't Book could go. And especially when Marquese Chris plays the same position as Dragan Bender, if they feel like they can get the right kind of guy that helps the future of this team, of course Dragan Bender is expendable. Now, in terms of the draft, I don't think any position is offline there either, because at this point you're trying to get the best young talent, the best player available at the slot that you draft. So yeah, I think Monk could be one of the guys that is here depending on where the Suns draft, and you shift guys, you maybe put him at a small forward, you figure it out, you get the right kind of talent in here regardless of position right now.
Yeah, I agree with those answers. I think I'd probably be less inclined to draft Malik Monk over just about any other guy in the top 10 simply because of that positional thing. I also think he's a little small for the shooting guard position, although that is completely debatable. He might be perfectly sized. There's a lot of undersized shooting guards these days who are combo-type players out there, and Monk has a ton of athleticism, so definitely he could be good. I would just personally in the draft lean more toward a small forward or a point guard and find that veteran shooting guard to come off the bench and be a sniper from three-point range, kind of like they did Barbosa this year. Keep someone like that behind Booker going forward. You don't want to – we've already doubled up Bender and Chris. You don't want to necessarily double up two really high potential, high ceiling shooting guards with each other that can't necessarily slide over a small forward. You'll see Booker play some small forward, but he's not really a small forward unless he puts on a lot of weight like Gordon Hayward did or something like that, where Gordon Hayward went from a kind of skinny to all of a sudden looking like Captain America one off season. And that's really helped his game out. But definitely Booker should stay as a shooting guard his whole career, and so why would you draft a top five guy at that same position?
I think it just depends on what your draft board is. If Monk is the number one guy left on the board when you're sitting there drafting, I think you take him and you figure it out, whether it's moving him or something. You take the guy that you feel has the highest ceiling right now, because you're as much accumulating young talent still as you are building a roster that makes 100% sense right now.
I don't know. I disagree with that. And just to piggyback off of Dave's comment, Devin Booker has played 22% of his time at the small forward position this year. But I think if a lot of the time it makes sense to take first or best player available. But I mean, look at the Sixers. with Noel and with Ja and with Embiid. I think that when you're talking about a player of Devin Booker's caliber, who is pretty much guaranteed to be an all-star, he is the future of the team, that you just don't take a shooting guard. I do think that you could take a power forward, even though we have Marquese Chris. I do think you could take a small forward, even though we do have TJ Warren. And I think you could take a point guard, but I don't think you draft a position that high behind Devin Booker.
Yeah,
I understand the thinking, but right now I just you look at the roster and I don't think you really see 100% where this team's going anyways in terms of it. I still feel they're in asset accumulation mode, which I hate calling players assets. Draft picks are assets, players are players. But I think they're in the process of just accumulating great young talent and figuring it out as they go. That's just where I'm at with it, and I think I go that route. And I don't know that Ryan McDonough agrees. He and I haven't had lunch to discuss his plans going into the draft and the big board. I'm sure he'll call me, but we haven't had that lunch yet, so I don't know exactly.
We are PHX.
And you are listening to the Solar Panel, a Phoenix Suns podcast, part of the Almighty Baller Network. You can follow Greg individually on Twitter at Espo, Dave King at Dave King NBA, and myself at Radio Tim NBA, as well as the show. You can follow us at Sun Solar Panel. You can also find us on the Facebook at Sun Solar Panel as well. If you haven't had a chance yet, please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. It is the one thing you can do that impacts the show the most.
All right, before we go, who's your MVP of the week, guys? We need to do that. I think I left it out of the rundown, but I think we need to name an MVP of the week. So, Tim, I'm passing you the ball. Who's your MVP this week?
It's not even close. It's a Suns gorilla. That highlight play where the where the drumstick went off onto the court, he dove onto the court, mid-play, got it. The next game, he actually had that on a leash. That play right there got more replays on the internet, on highlight videos on ESPN, than I've seen the entirety of the Suns season combined. It has to be the Suns gorilla.
How did we not even talk about that? Tim, you just saved the show, because it would have been awful if we did not at least discuss the true American hero, the Suns gorilla, who risks life and limb to make sure that none of the Suns' young talent slipped on a drumstick. Now, granted, it was his fault that said drumstick was out on the court, and we're not talking chicken drumstick. We're talking literal drumstick you beat a drum with. So I agree. Great week for the Suns gorilla. For me, buzzer beaters as the Suns MVP this week. Tyler Ulis and Devin Booker with amazing buzzer beaters right in their defenders' eyes. I got to give it up to buzzer beaters.
All right, I'm going to go a little bit more obscure. I'm going to say, although I'd have to actually say the gorilla, but since the gorilla was already taken, thank you very much for calling that one, Tim. I'm going to actually say Derrick Jones Jr. Dude went from being completely out of the NCAA, being let go by his school, because of a technicality on an SAT score, to making it onto an NBA roster, getting a largely unguaranteed but still a 4-year contract with an NBA team over summer without even playing summer league, and now he's got a regular rotation spot and he looks like he's earned it. He looks like a real NBA player, Derrick Jones Jr. He can play some defense. He can certainly high fly. He got himself into the NBA dunk contest this year and got a huge, nice little bonus even for coming in second. That guy has had the best year of his life for sure, and we should all be very proud of the fact that he is now a regular rotation player.
I am just glad we don't check SAT scores for technicalities here on the Solar Panel, because I probably wouldn't be here next week either. So
I love watching Derrick Jones Jr. play, because I never have any idea who he's going to be guarding. And so I'm just always curious, like, who do they throw him on? Because it could be anybody on the team.
You know, he's got the length to guard big guys. He's got the quickness to guard guards. I really do think he has a potential to be that guy that not playing the same way, but doing the same kind of thing as a PJ Tucker. He obviously won't be as physical as Tucker is, but definitely he's got the recovery ability. He can block shots from behind. I think Derrick Jones Jr. could have a very good future if he can develop any kind of delivery on offense. He's kind of like a smaller version of a Dragan Bender this year. Bender was really good on defense. Could hit a three, but otherwise didn't have a whole lot offensively. Derrick Jones Jr., did a whole lot of can do a whole lot of defense. He can slam dunk a ball with like any obviously better than anybody, but he can't do anything else offensively. So both of those guys need to develop an offensive game, but they can be really, really good glue guys on teams.
Well, we've talked a lot about the development of the youth on this show. A guy that I think deserves a lot of credit is Earl Watson. I wondered, how's this going to play? Is he going to be able to help these young guys? Can he coach? He deserves a lot of credit for where this team is right now and the development of these young guys, in particular, Devin Booker, Eric Bledsoe, everybody across the roster he's had an impact on. So I got to give kudos to Earl Watson for that.
Yeah, we have to have a whole episode just to talk about the year that Earl Watson has had, because he's had a lot of detractors this year. He doesn't coach the same way other coaches coach. He doesn't focus on the same things other coaches focus on. But whenever you actually talk to NBA people, they do talk about culture and attitude and togetherness as being almost as important as actual talent on your team. And Watson has preached that all year, and now we're starting to see some of the fruits of this labor. And I'm not a fan that what's happening today would have still happened today if things in history were done differently. I'm a fan of believing that things happen for a reason. And Watson playing older guys earlier in the year could have had this effect, and these players may not be playing at this level right now if they didn't have the first 3 months of the season.
We are PHX.
Next week, I am going to be gone. I am in the Bahamas. These two gentlemen, Mr. Espo, Mr. Dave King, you're going to be taking the realms. You're going to be doing the editing. You're going to get it all up on our host, Blog Talk Radio. I am so excited to hear the finished product next week when I get back from the Bahamas.
It's going to sound much like a train wreck or a car accident, so you're not going to be able to look away. I'll tell you that much. That's how it'll be. Maybe, Dave, we find a special guest to fill Tim's seat next week. I don't know. Maybe we pull something out of the bag of tricks and bring somebody that that people want to listen to.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. We'll try to do that.
Lon Babby, I'm putting in a call right now. Lon, you and me, Dave. What do you say?
That'd be fun.
I want you guys to get Eddie Johnson.
Oh, that I can make that happen. EJ will give me shit. Sorry, are we allowed to curse on the show?
Yes.
I don't know. He'll give me crap.
We're not on one of the networks, so we're allowed to curse, I think. Yeah.
Eddie will give me a heaping helping of shit if he is on the show, but I think we could make that happen too. We'll go into the Rolodex and see what we can pull out.
Just don't have Eddie Johnson on when I'm gone, because I really want to talk to him about color commentating and his experience color commentating. So if you have one, it can't be next week. Any other time, just not next week.
All right, when Dave finally decides that he's going to take one of these weeks off that he told us he was going to do, maybe we'll bring in EJ.
That sounds good. Next week we'll try to get somebody who's either currently on the coaching staff or on the roster. That'd be fun. We'll see who we can wrangle up.
We are PHX.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.